From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Donald Trump walks away from a nuclear deal with North Korea. Was that the right decision? And what happens next? Plus, the fallout from Michael Cohen's testimony on Capitol Hill continues. And we'll tell you where the Democrats are going next as they lay the groundwork, or at least attempt to, for the potential impeachment of Donald Trump. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal here in our New York studio with Dan Henninger.
Good to be with you.
And in Washington, D.C., Kimberly Strassel. Hello, Kim.
Hello, Paul.
All right.
Hello,
Dan. Yeah, you too, Dan. All right, here we go. Let's talk first about the North Korea summit, which ended Thursday in Hanoi with an abrupt end, prematurely, as it turned out, as Donald Trump decided that he had to walk away from a potential deal that he said it was all written out and ready to sign. At least that was the assertion at his post-summit press conference, as he said he couldn't sign a deal, Dan, that didn't go far enough to remove nuclear weapons. The Koreans were willing, according to our sources, to dismantle the Yongbyon nuclear facility, a significant facility with plutonium and uranium enrichment, but not not the other sites. And Trump said that that just wasn't enough.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Paul, the more I think about this event in which Trump kind of got up and walked away from this enormous summit, the more curious I get about what exactly might have happened. I'm just not sure the conventional narrative that they weren't adequately prepared sufficiently explains an event like this.
What do you mean?
Well, a couple of things. I think it comes down to Kim Jong-un himself. And I'm beginning to wonder whether Kim didn't get something akin to cold feet about what was going on. I can't get out of my mind the fact that about a week or so ago, the Wall Street Journal carried a report by some North Korean specialist in South Korea noting that it appeared that Kim had recently carried out a purge of top officials, including some executions. The idea there was that some of these people were resisting overtures to the United States. I'm not so sure about that. A lot of effort had been put into this by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and our emissary to North Korea, Stephen Biegun. And it was kind of back and forth. I guess they thought some progress was being made. But ultimately, Kim is a one-man show in North Korea. And one cannot forget that these nuclear weapons are the Kim regime's reason for being. And we always sort of talk interchangeably, the North Koreans, North Korea, Kim. Look, this is Kim Jong-un. He's running a regime that his grandfather started more than 50 years ago. It hasn't changed much in 50 years. And I don't think Kim quite could see a path forward. President Trump was offering him the possibility of denuclearizing, a lot of help modernizing North Korea. It kept saying it could become an economic power. Conceivably true. It happened to South Korea. It would take a long time. But, Paul, I just don't think Kim at this point sees a way to step forward by simultaneously denuclearizing but also restructuring the North Korean regime.
Well, it seems that that is entirely possible. The offer that they made, if the accounts that we've heard are true, is not all that much different from the offers that his father had made in the past, and the Koreans had made in the past under George W. Bush and Bill Clinton. It's we'll give you a little bit on Yongbyon, and then and you give us money. In this case, they wanted the sanctions removed, post-2016 sanctions that were focused, that are focused on the North Korean economy and have worked to cut off some income flows to North Korea. So it's an interesting question. I don't know. Donald Trump, Kim, says that he's going to continue. The talks will continue at lower levels. There's not a lot of acrimony, at least at this stage, from the breakup of the summit. But I don't know that I don't see a quick pathway back to this anytime soon unless Kim changes his mind, a la Dan's point.
No, and that's why it was arguably would have been tough if you were in the president or his entourage to make the decision to walk the way. But I think he deserves more credit than he's getting. I mean, one, for the reason you just laid out, this is classic North Korean strategy, right? They escalate a situation, they get the players to put sanctions on them, say something must be done. They then offer some token little concession, something that doesn't go anywhere near dealing with their nuclearization or militarization issues. And then in return, they get sanctions released. And as you've mentioned, prior presidents have fallen for this. The president didn't do so. Could you imagine, too, if he had, he would have come back and been ridiculed for having done this. The press is always loaded for bear to go after him anyway. He would have been accused of making a very bad deal. And the nice thing here is at least keeps open the possibility of doing something more. And we can talk a little bit about what that is. Hopefully, he will continue to be tough. It's the only way that you're going to continue pressure North Korea to doing this. But, it means he's come back. He's getting some grudging praise from Democrats. He's getting support from Republicans who are particularly glad that he didn't do a deal that sort of looks like Barack Obama's deal with Iran.
Well, and what has to happen next now is I think, number one, the sanctions will have to be sustained, tightened in their enforcement. China has kind of eased up on enforcement since the Singapore summit last year. Russia had never really enforced it. They're continuing to employ Russian North Korean migrant workers whose pay is sent back to the regime. The workers don't get to keep it. So that's a source of cash for North Korea. They have some of the pressure of the so-called maximum pressure campaign has eased. That needs to be tightened up. And then, Dan, the president criticized these military exercises that the U.S. had been conducting with South Korea and Japan. Trump said, "Well, we don't really need them; cost too much." We've got to get those back if we want to maintain military readiness against any possible North Korea action.
Yeah, this raises indeed the question of the way forward, and I think even the Trump people understand that they now have to regroup and figure out what to do next. We should make one quick point about the sanctions. The press today has made a big issue over the fact that the North Koreans disagreed with President Trump over the degree of sanctions relief they were looking for. Mr. Trump said at one point that they wanted all the sanctions lifted. And then the Foreign Minister Ri of North Korea gave a press conference, and he said, "We did not want all of them lifted, just a partial lifting." Our sources, and they are pretty good sources, say that what the North Koreans were asking for was the lifting of all the post-2016 sanctions, which are the ones that the Trump administration imposed and which are significant. They were big, and obviously they have been hurting the North Korean regime. They wanted to start those revenue flows back into what they've got left of an economy. So as you suggested, the sanctions probably are not going to be lifted. But if the standstill is as clear as it seems to be, I think the United States does have to at least start thinking about its military options. And that includes not suspending the military exercises. They're not merely drills. They are not merely a show of force. They are expected to keep our troops ready to execute if they need to. And make no mistake, the North Koreans have a massive, massive army and capabilities sitting up there on the South Korean border.
All right. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal. We're talking about North Korea and Michael Cohen.
ADP knows anything you hear, anything you don't hear, anything you kind of heard, anything you weren't supposed to hear and now have to pretend like you didn't, can change the world of work. From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to take on the next anything.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigo with Kim Strassel and Dan Henninger. Let's turn to Michael Cohen and his testimony this week, the former fixer, as everybody refers to him, and a lawyer for Donald Trump for 10 years. Has turned on Trump and unloaded on him into the Congress of the United States. And the fallout has continued. Trump has responded, calling him a liar, although pointing to the fact that Cohen had said there's no evidence that he has of any collusion between Trump and the Russians. So let's step back and talk about what this means in a political sense, Kim. I mean, no question it trashed Trump from stem to stern, the hearing, in terms of his character. How many people really are still waiting to be persuaded one way or another about Donald Trump's character in America? I don't know. I think everybody who's awake has formed some judgment. So politically, I guess the question would be, how much legal liability is there? How much of this evidence could ever make it into an article of impeachment, which the Democrats would like to deliver?
Yeah, I think you can divide his testimony into those two questions. What came out of it that was potential legal liability? What came out of it that is potential political liability? And those may intersect. Now, in terms of legal liability, probably the most notable thing is Michael Cohen saying that the president ordered him to make this payment to this pornographic actress, Stormy Daniels, and it was a hush money payment so that it wouldn't come out during the 2016 campaign, that this happened, you know, days not long before the election, and that this was done to aid the campaign. And obviously, Michael Cohen was himself sentenced for engaging, being part of that payment, which prosecutors called a campaign finance violation. I think that there are some big questions about whether or not that is technically a violation. It would depend on whether or not the president had done this in order to help his campaign or, in fact, for personal reasons to hide the fact from Melania, his family, etc. It'd be a big judgment call in court. Also, whether or not prosecutors would ever go there. But, you know, even if they named him unindicted co-conspirator in some future court document, that could be problematic for him, which gets to the political side. Democrats obviously saw this testimony as the first step toward impeachment. You saw Nancy Pelosi tamping that down because I think she's aware that having a known and itself admitted liar come and give information about a campaign finance violation isn't the stuff of impeachment. But it does show us where they're headed.
Well, yeah. And, Michael Cohen, Michael Cohen was the Democrats' witness for the prosecution. Alas, Mr. Cohen is not a prosecutor. He's on his way to prison. The real prosecutors are working for either Robert Mueller or the Federal Southern District of New York in Manhattan. And they are the ones who have to make the call on whether, as Kim was describing with this campaign, potential or alleged campaign finance violation that Trump was complicit, should be named as an unindicted co-conspirator or named at all. Bear in mind that Mr. Trump has, through his tweets and otherwise, managed to insult both the Southern District's lawyers and Mueller's team, creating a kind of personal incentive to see if they can go there. But that's kind of the kind of risks that Donald Trump runs and the kind of risks that I think came out in Michael Cohen's testimony about the way Trump has conducted his life, his business, and his politics.
Well, the Justice Department has a rule that presidents are not should not be indicted for crimes while they are in office. That is reserved for the sanction for behaving is high crime, misbehaving is high crimes and misdemeanors and impeachment under the Constitution. Now, that means that he could be indicted and the indictment could be sealed and then he could be indicted after he's left office. But while he's in office, I don't think we're going to see any criminal action against the president, either in the Southern District or by Robert Mueller. And, of course, we're waiting for Robert Mueller's report. Could come out, media reports suggest, as early as next week. What that we may not, of course, then know what's in it. That's when it could be presented to Bill Barr, the new attorney general. On that front, I think we have to wait for and see what comes out on the Russia collusion question, because there wasn't a lot of new evidence from Cohen's hearing on that, Kim. But there was a couple of new intriguing things, which I wonder if you'd elaborate on a little bit, because I know you've done some reporting on it. And that is questions about Donald Trump's personal business behavior before he was president.
Yeah, and this is important because you're going to hear a lot about this in coming months. And why? Because of what you just mentioned, Robert Mueller, meaning that if the predictions are right, which we are hearing from the press, and we don't know, but let's say it's true that he comes back and, you know, he doesn't have any real case against Donald Trump. He doesn't find any Russian collusion. Well, we've been promised for 2 years that he was going to bring the goods on that. And Democrats are already looking for a new avenue that they can pursue that still allows them to use the word collusion, but also allows them to sidle away from all the people that apparently weren't really involved in it, like Carter Page or Paul Manafort. So they've hit upon financial crimes or financial collusion. This is what Mr. Cohen has been talking about behind closed doors this week, because he actually did three hearings in Washington. One was public, but two were private. And apparently the last one he did in front of the House Intelligence Committee, this was the major focus, as they wanted to find all about Donald Trump's efforts to build a Trump Tower in Moscow. We have had other sort of intimations from guys like Fusion GPS, the original creators of the dossier, that something was corrupt there, or in terms of money laundering with Deutsche Bank. It's all very vague, but that is where they are headed these days.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the allegation that Cohen made was that Trump overstated his assets when he was seeking a loan from Deutsche Bank, and understated and then stated them a different value for the IRS. For tax purposes. And if that's true and you could prove it, that would be presumably some form of financial fraud, Dan.
Yeah, that's right. But ultimately, Paul, politically, you got to ask, the Democrats have embarked on a strategy here, and you got to wonder whether the strategy makes sense. If you think about the Democratic Party right now, We're on the brink of a presidential election, or sort of already into this campaign with all these Democrats running. So what do the Democrats stand for? I think if you ask someone, they'd say, well, three things. One, Donald Trump is a criminal and an arch fiend. Two, Medicare for all. And three, the New Green Deal. Is that a platform on which you're going to carry yourself back into the White House in 2020? Or is it a platform that is potentially going to backfire on the Democrats? I mean, the average person is sitting out there wondering if they have anything on their minds other than trying to simply hammer the president of the United States literally day in and day out, meanwhile having a debate among themselves over whether the party is now controlled by socialists or by traditional Democrats.
Well, but I mean, on that point about impeachment and its plausibility as a political strategy, I mean, Nancy Pelosi, House Speaker today, and an eminent grown-up in the Democratic Party, he's been around a long time, she said, we're going to have to wait for the facts, and asked about the Cohen hearing. She said, well, I really wasn't paying a lot of attention to it. I mean, I think that there is a calculation there that she doesn't want to seem preoccupied at all with this impeachment stuff. She's leaving it to the committees and so on, and she'll see what happens as it develops. The problem for her politically is that once you begin to set up the machinery of impeachment and it starts, And Kim, you mentioned Adam Schiff's Intelligence Committee hearings. I mean, Adam Schiff has already written. I ran an op-ed by Adam Schiff probably about a year ago, in which he said the president is guilty of collusion and should be impeached. So
right, they're already there, and then you add to that, Paul. That you've got a progressive base that is demanding that this happen. And remember, everyone in the presidential field is catering to that base. Everybody, that's their main, the ascendant part of the party at the moment. You've got guys like Tom Steyer who are spending bucket loads of money holding town halls in the districts of these chairman heads like Jerry Nadler and Elijah Cummings, saying if you don't impeach, watch out. So they're under a lot of pressure to do so. Now, Ms. Pelosi has got an incentive to make it look as though they're doing this calmly, wisely, and deliberately, rather than the fact that it's already been in the books for however long.
So you think that it's the impeachment is going to be very hard to stop, although I guess they're going to need more than they got from Michael Cohen, is my view.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. You got to have better than a self-admitted liar and a campaign finance violation.
But the power of social media and media today is just so torrential and so overwhelming as a tsunami that I understand where Nancy Pelosi's coming from, but I don't know that she's going to be able to stand against what the progressive base is building to.
And on that, just a final note, it's not related to impeachment, but we have reports this week that after a 26 Democrats broke from the House majority to vote for a Republican amendment on gun control in the House, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez let them have it in a closed-door conference meeting and said, you better get with it or I'm going to put you on a list. My list for primary challenges, Kim. And then Pelosi had to intervene and say, look, we got to unify or we're in trouble. And all I could think of was Freedom Caucus and John Boehner.
That is so funny. I was just going to say the exact same words. I read that story and smiled, Paul. I've got so many memories of covering this incredibly, you know, the Republicans, they take back over the House in 2010. They're designed to be this stop sign to the Obama presidency, and they spend the first 6 years just in a circular firing squad. So we will see if Democrats are destined for the same outcome, but they are not off to a great start.
All right. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Dan. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with more Potomac Watch.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.